Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik once reflected that given the lack of objects of illumination in the Holy of Holies, as well as a lack of windows, the high priest on Yom Kippur would have entered the space every year in complete darkness. And yet, he added, he would nevertheless have known exactly where he should go, how he should walk, and where he should stand. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 56, The Roman in the Holy of Holies. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. The Roman historian Tacitus did not like Jews, and the sections of his writings that address the Jewish people are filled with utterly untrue ruminations and fulminations about Judaism. Thus, there is his ridiculous discussion about the origin of the Jewish Sabbath, an institution that, like many prominent classical Greeks and Romans, Tacitus mocked. Quote, "We are told that the seventh day was set aside for rest because this marked the end of their toils. In course of time, the seductions of idleness made them devote every seventh year to indolence as well. Others say that this is a mark of respect to Saturn, either because they owe the basic principles of their religion to the Idae, who, we are told, were expelled in the company of Saturn and became the founders of the Jewish race, or because, among the seven stars that rule mankind, the one that describes the highest orbit and exerts the greatest influence is Saturn. A further argument is that most of the heavenly bodies complete their path and revolutions in multiples of seven," end quote. So Tacitus writes, and none of this, of course, is true at all. Eerily, the Roman historian joins his ignorant aspersions about Judaism with an anti-Semitic rant that could have been written as an expression of Jew hate in any period in our history. Tacitus adds, quote, "The other practices of the Jews are sinister and revolting and have entrenched themselves by their very wickedness. Wretches of the most abandoned kind, who had no use for the religion of their fathers, took to contributing dues and freewill offerings to swell the Jewish exchequer, and other reasons for their increasing wealth may be found in their stubborn loyalty and ready benevolence towards brother Jews," end quote. It is therefore all the more interesting that it is thanks to Tacitus that we know of an episode in Jewish history that is truly inspiring, one which took place in the holiest site on earth, one which captures the clash between Judaism and Rome, and which ultimately embodies the essence of our eternity. The civil war in the Hasmonean house not only destroyed the golden age of Shalom Tzion, it ended up bringing Rome into Jerusalem. Following Pompey's conquest of the temple, the Roman general decided to emphasize his power over the site by entering its most sacred precincts. As Josephus describes it, Pompey did not take anything. He took a brief tour of the areas from which all except the priests were barred, and then restored the high priesthood to the Hasmonean brother Hyrcanus, who had sided with him against Aristobulus. Quote, "And no small enormities were committed about the temple itself, which in former ages had been inaccessible and seen by none. For Pompey went into it, and not a few of those that were with him also, and saw all that which it was unlawful for any other men to see, but only for the high priests. There were in that temple the golden table, the holy candlestick and the pouring vessels, and a great quantity of spices. And besides these, there were among the treasures 2,000 talents of sacred money. Yet did Pompey touch nothing of all this, on account of his regard to religion. And in this point also he acted in a manner that was worthy of his virtue. The next day he gave order to those that had the charge of the temple to cleanse it, and to bring what offerings the law required to God, and restored the high priesthood to Hyrcanus, both because he had been useful to him in other respects, and because he hindered the Jews in the country from giving Aristobulus any assistance in the war against him," end quote. This is Josephus's version, but Tacitus adds another interesting element, describing not only what Pompey did in the temple, but also what he had expected to see there and how these expectations were defied. Here is Tacitus's much briefer, but ultimately more interesting summation of Pompey's visit to the Temple Mount. Quote, "Roman control of Judea was first established by Gnaeus Pompey. As victor, he claimed the right to enter the temple, and this incident gave rise to the common impression that it contained no representation of the deity. The sanctuary was empty, and the Holy of Holies untenanted," end quote. Tacitus' description is brief, and we must unpack it to appreciate it. What set the Jews apart above all was, of course, their concept of the divine. Thus, Tacitus, in another paragraph, comparing Egyptians and Jews, writes that, quote, the Egyptians worship a variety of animals in half-human, half-bestial forms, whereas the Jewish religion is a purely spiritual monotheism. They hold it to be impious to make idols of perishable materials in the likeness of man. For them, the most high and eternal cannot be portrayed by human hands and will never pass away. For this reason, they erect no images in their cities, still less in their temple. Their kings are not so flattered, the Roman emperors not so honored. End quote. What this means is that it was the most sacred sphere of the temple in Jerusalem where the truest differences between Rome and Jerusalem could be discerned. The Romans in their temples created statues of their gods in human form and would also create similar statues of their own human rulers who in the end would be divinized by the Romans. Pompey, entering the most sacred sphere of the temple in Jerusalem, would have been eager to see the statues that he thought would be inside the Sanctum Sanctorum, but in the end he was flummoxed by what was there. In the Second Temple, not even the Ark of the Covenant was to be found, openly, in the Holy of Holies. Pompey ended up entering what seemed to him to be an entirely empty space, what Tacitus called untenanted. But of course for Jews, that space was not untenanted at all. God dwelled there. God dwells there. And it was, and it remains, the holiest place on earth. The Cambridge historian Simon Goldhill offers the following reflection on Pompey's visit. Goldhill writes, quote, Pompey walked straight in, we are told, to see what he no doubt expected to be a glorious statue to mark the significance of the temple for the Jewish people. Romans regularly took cult statues of other cultures and transported them back to Rome in triumphant appropriation. He was amazed to find nothing there and remained baffled by the whole experience. This story is told by Tacitus, the Roman historian, but it is retold by the Jews. History is not always controlled by the victors. The contrast of the emptiness of the shrine and the practical man of war's confusion is eloquent and for once allows the non-material its moment of assertion over the powerful realities of war and conquest. End quote. The meaning, of course, is that the temple embodied something of which pagan Rome could not conceive, and the temple itself reflected for Jews the teaching that, as important as national security and national defense is, there is always something higher, someone higher, than political power itself, on whom all power relies, and who reminds us that power is not an end in itself. This is an aspect of the temple that it seems even some of the most intellectual Romans did not understand, and this because the temple captured an aspect of Jewish history that they did not understand. Take for a moment Tacitus's bizarre version of the story of the Israelite exodus from Egypt. Tacitus writes, quote, the whole of Egypt was once plagued by a wasting disease which caused bodily disfigurement. So Pharaoh Bahorus went to the oracle of Haman to ask for a cure and was told to purify his kingdom by expelling the victims to other lands as they lay under a divine curse. Thus a multitude of sufferers was rounded up, herded together, and abandoned in the wilderness. Here the exiles tearfully resigned themselves to their fate, but one of them who was called Moses urged his companions not to wait passively for help from God or man, for both had deserted them. They should trust to their own initiative and to whatever guidance first helped them to extricate themselves from their present plight. They agreed and started off at random into the unknown, but exhaustion set in, chiefly through lack of water, and the level plain was already strewn with the bodies of those who had collapsed and were at their last gasp. End quote. Tacitus then describes in his version the discovery of water and then adds, quote, they traveled on for 6 days without a break, and on the seventh they expelled the previous inhabitants of Canaan, took over their lands, and in them built a holy city and temple. End quote. So Tacitus writes, and of course, again, none of this is in any way accurate. For Tacitus, it was Pharaoh who let Israel go. For Tacitus, it was Moses, not God, who led Israel through the wilderness. But for us, of course, the story of the Exodus from Egypt expresses the exact opposite idea. Every year we sit at the Seder and remind ourselves that it was in fact Pharaoh who enslaved us. A reminder, as we add, that in every generation there are enemies of our people that rise up against us and seek to destroy us. Moreover, as important as Jewish self-defense is, we further, at the Seder, tell the story of the Exodus giving full and final credit to God in order to remind us that it is ultimately God to whom we as a people and a faith owe our eternity. And in the end, the temple became considered by Jewish tradition the crowning achievement of David, precisely because, though he did not build it, he dreamed of it towering over Jerusalem as a reminder to Israel that God is the source of our endurance. The tale of Pompeii and the Holy of Holies is a striking one, and it reminds us of a fascinating feature of the Second Temple. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik once reflected that given the lack of objects of illumination in the Holy of Holies, as well as a lack of windows, the high priest on Yom Kippur would have entered the space every year in complete darkness. And yet, he added, he would nevertheless have known exactly where he should go, how he should walk, and where he should stand. What this means is that the high priest's steps were guided by a sense of the blueprint of the temple itself. The high priest could see nothing. He was in total darkness, but he nevertheless existentially understood where he was. The tale of the temple and of the Holy of Holies experienced by Pompeii, in which no physical object openly stood, reflects the uniquely Jewish approach to sight and sanctity. The writer Yossi Kleiner-Levy describes his visit to the home of David Rubinger, who in 1967 had famously photographed the three soldiers at the Western Wall. Yossi Kleiner-Levy asked Rubinger which photograph from his career was his favorite, and Alevi writes, quote, "Wordlessly, he led me into his study and pointed to the lone photograph hanging over his desk. It depicted a blind boy, a new immigrant in the 1950s, wearing a kova tembel, the conical kibbutznik's hat, his mouth open in wonder. He strokes a relief map of the land of Israel. I call it seeing the homeland," Rubinger explained. "For a photographer, blindness holds a special terror. Yet this boy," Rubinger was saying, "was teaching us that love provided a deeper way of seeing than mere physical sight." End quote. So Halevi writes, and this I think captures the Jewish relationship with the temple itself and with the sacred city in which it stood. For the Jewish people over the millennia, Jerusalem was the city that had been physically destroyed but could still be visualized just the same. The ability to see what cannot be seen. How love, as Halevi put it, provides a deeper way of seeing than mere physical sight. This was the essence of the Jewish relationship with Jerusalem and the temple. Pompeii's confusion in the Holy of Holies, seeking statues and finding only sacred space, summarized the clash between Rome and Jerusalem that was about to come. Tacitus, in the midst of his calumnies about the Jews, writes a profound truth. Quote, "Moses prescribed for them a novel religion quite different from those of the rest of mankind. Among the Jews, all things are profane that we hold sacred. On the other hand, they regard as permissible what seems to us immoral." End quote. In the story we are telling, the battle in Jerusalem between Jews and the Roman Empire is about to unfold, and it is Pompeii's perplexity in the Holy of Holies that allows us to understand why it is ultimately the Jews that endured. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.